The Theonauts Podcast.
Christian news from around the globe.
In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth.
It is the glory of God to conceal a thing, but the honor of kings is to search out a matter.
Explore the vast reaches of God's Word.
Welcome to episode 3 of the Theonauts.
Hey, how you doing out there?
Good. I'm David Gaddy.
I'm Jeremiah Orr.
And together we are the Theonauts. So, first off, let's back up a little bit. We're a little late.
Yeah.
On our recording.
Kind of slow. A lot happened last week. Yeah. It was a whirlwind.
Busy stuff. I had a funeral of a close friend when we normally would record this. Yeah. And Jeremiah was tied up with...
taking kids to an Easter retreat at Falls Creek. That was quite fun.
Woohoo!
Yeah.
So, we're going to dedicate this, since Passover week, we kind of missed that. We're going to spend this...
A little late to the party.
Yeah, we're going to spend some of this time talking about Passover and what all that means and stuff like that. So, and then also, I want to apologize to our handful of listeners because our last episode sounded so horrible on audio quality. But we're idiots at this and we're trying to figure everything out. There's some construction that was going on, and we heard all those trucks going by.
It was so funny. Man, it was so distracting, too. I couldn't even think. It was like, it's never going to stop.
Right. It was like, and it's all edited up and chopped up because there were some points where we couldn't even hear ourselves talk because of it.
Some of my best points, David, cut out. I was so hurt, brokenhearted. But that's all right. I understand. Sound quality comes first. So.
Yeah. Well, that's the way it goes. So hopefully we've got some of that worked out this time.
It sounds better already. So.
All right. So you want to start us out with some news there, Jeremiah?
I would love to start us out with some news.
And now the news.
I have pretty much three little news clips to bring to you today. The first one is, man, I tell you what, Hollywood is like blowing up with Christian movies lately. You notice that?
Yes.
Like there was, okay, so the Jesus movie, and I forget the
Son of God.
Son of God, yeah. Which I went and saw, was pretty good. I didn't like it all.
It was basically
much,
a rehash of the Bible miniseries that was on History Channel.
Right, which that was a really good miniseries to check out. The movie was great too. I mean, it portrayed Christ as who he was, but there were a couple little things that I got grumpy at in the middle of the movie. Actually, I got more angry at Son of God than I did at the Noah movie, which is interesting.
Really?
Yeah. But anyway, so you got that one. You have the Noah movie, obviously. You have the God's Not Dead movie that everybody's talking about. And that was a pretty cool movie.
Talk about apologetics.
Apologetics, exactly. Yeah. And, that was an epic movie for me. I thought it was great. Until the ending, I mean, it was a little too... Christians, I don't know. Christians have this habit of making movies a little too cheesy. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Ham-handed?
Yes. to where it's like almost overpowering. Like,
right. So, this is the message in case you didn't hear it for the past 2 hours.
In fact, there was a point in the movie where it actually flashed up on the screen, "If you believe this, text God's not dead to all of your friends." And I'm like, oh, really? Okay. Well, I guess that's one way to evangelize, but it's also a way to annoy your friends, so whatever. Anyways, so the latest one that's come out right now is a movie called Heaven is for Real.
Okay.
And it's about this boy, and actually it's a movie based off of a book, based off of a true story. The dad of the boy wrote the book. My wife read it. I haven't read it, so I don't know how good it is. But anyways, it's got a lot of people talking about near-death experiences. Okay. Are they, you know, is there... And so I pulled a little blurb off from the Huffington Post on it, and... this is what it says. It says, "Is it possible to die? take a quick look around, and come back to life to describe what you found. Seekers have asked that question for a millennia, with the answers elusive and inconclusive at best. A new film purports to give a glimpse into what people of all faiths, and those of none, frequently debate about heaven's defining features. Angels, fields of green, tunnels of light, and other common descriptors of life after death. It's reviving a conversation among not only the religious, but also the small and growing community of Americans who research and say they know firsthand about the near-death experience. So the movie is about this boy who actually dies, I guess, and goes and sees heaven and sees Jesus and his family, and then comes back to life and starts telling his parents all this stuff, and they don't believe him. And then they find out one day he shows them a picture of his grandfather at like the age of 30, and the boy's like, yeah, that's Pop Pop and all this stuff. And so, you know, it's really an interesting debate. Like, should you trust these people? Should you think that this is a definitive picture of
how
heaven?
How old is the kid?
He's like, I think he was, I can't remember, I want to say like 6 or 7 when he died and went to heaven and then came back. So, and I imagine now he's probably a teenager, but I'm not sure.
Well, yeah, but that has something to do with, sure, you know, how trustworthy he could be. But
that's true.
I mean, if it's a kid, it's hard, you know, if he knew some stuff that was like out there.
Right.
I honestly have no opinion about that.
Me.
I've got close people to me who have had that type of experience.
Yeah.
And so I don't necessarily discount it. I have other close people to me that I had one friend of mine, she was dead for like a while.
Wow.
and resuscitated, and I've talked to her and she's like, I can't remember anything.
Wow.
Nothing whatsoever. But she can't remember anything during that traumatic period at all. She can't remember going down or coming out or even the days that were surrounding it. So, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, me neither.
I leave that up to God to determine.
Exactly. I always take them with a grain of salt because I just, you know, you never know.
Well, I did read a book called 23 Minutes in Hell.
I was going to bring that up. I'm glad you did. That's hilarious.
I read that book.
Yeah.
And it was like, what? Come on. Seriously? Hell's like a dungeon with chains on the wall.
Exactly. And demons coming and grabbing you.
Yeah, it was like something
out
of Dante's Inferno. I was like, really? I think you're just projecting onto this.
And that book was written on the tail end of another book by a guy named Don Piper, which was 30 Minutes in Heaven. Okay. So this guy's like, I'm going to make a quick butt. 23 Minutes in Hell. Let's do that one. And yeah, I always discount those. I go, so are demons in hell right now? Torturing people? I don't think so. Biblically,
no,
they can be. So, but you're describing demons torturing people. Where are the demons? Where's Satan right now? He's on earth.
Well, but then again, you're dealing with time, you know, and I've got this big thing about,
I guess so, yeah.
About, but time is relative, so.
I don't know. I'm very careful about that. One really crazy incident this boy describes, though. This is awesome. And I don't know, you know, again, I have no opinion like you, but so they keep showing him pictures of Jesus, right? And they're like, is this Jesus? And he's like, no. Is this Jesus? No. The clothes are right, but the dude is too white. That's pretty much what he's saying. No, it doesn't look like Jesus at all. It doesn't look like Jesus at all. Well, this girl from halfway around the world, like in Africa or something, she has a near-death experience and draws Jesus. Okay. And they put that picture on the internet. And so they're looking through these pictures, and this boy's like,
there he is.
That's him right there. That's it. It looks exactly like him.
Was he blonde and blue-eyed?
No, he wasn't. Surprisingly, you know? Crazy. And he didn't have a little nose either. Interesting. Just a thought. But, yeah. In fact, I had one kid one time whenever I told him in our youth group that Jesus wasn't white, that he looked more like a Mid-Eastern man, like maybe somebody you saw at your local Quickie Mart or something, you know? And this kid, I kid you not, goes, "Jesus weren't no terrorist." That's exactly what he said. And I thought, oh my goodness, is that really like our mindset today?
Oh, yeah.
That's so crazy. But anyways, so we got that. And then something else in the news that just caught me. While I was researching this, I was watching videos because, you know, what else am I going to do? Mm-hmm. I'm bored all day at work. I'm joking. Yeah. Hopefully my boss
and nothing listens. To do.
Yeah, exactly. But so I was watching this video of Stephen Colbert. Stephen Colbert, for those of you who don't know, is a Comedy Central fake news person. He's hilarious. He has this show called The Colbert Report. And I'm not telling you to go out and watch it because it might be a little bit crazy at times. But it's pretty funny somewhat. He plays a radical Christian as far as... So anyways, they had this... a well-known atheist come on named Bart Ehrman to plug his new book about Jesus and about the fact that there are so many inconsistencies in the Gospels,
yeah,
relating to Jesus. And you saw this clip, right?
Yeah. Also, I know Bart Ehrman pretty well. Yeah. I've read a couple of his books, and being a fan of textual criticism, that's what led me to some. He's got a very popular book called Misquoting Jesus.
Yeah.
Horrible thing, a rewriting of history. It's very much in the same lines of Dan Brown's take on history. You know, whenever he says,
sure,
when I wrote the Da Vinci Code, it was all based in truth.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So he and Bart Ehrman have the same historical references to everything happened at the Nicene Council. And we decided at that council, Jesus was going to be a god.
Divide.
We're going to pick only special Gospels that talk to that, and we're going to discard everything else. So
that's what I...
So what happened in this interview?
So Stephen Colbert just surprised me because I didn't think that he really believed anything about Christ or anything, but I guess he's an avowed Catholic after researching this. But he just tore him pretty much apart. So Ehrman's up there and he's like, yeah, well, pretty much, you know, all the Gospels contradict each other as to who Jesus was. It's only in the Gospel of John that you see that Jesus is divine or one of the Trinity. In fact, the Trinity was all made up and they used the Gospel of John. Well, the New Testament was really written by several different authors. And Stephen Colbert pretty much stops and he's like, so you're telling me that you know more about this than the people from when it was written who argue that this is truth, this is gospel truth. And Bart Ehrman's like, kind of shuts up there. And then he says, well, no, well, listen, you know, you have Mark's gospel, which is the earliest gospel and doesn't say anything about Jesus being the Messiah or being not
being God,
the Messiah, but being God. It does talk about him being Messiah, but not God. And then you have Luke's gospel and Matthew's that kind of do the same thing. And then you have John over here saying, no way, Jesus is divine. He is part of the God, triune God. And so, you know, it's all false. And so Colbert does this awesome thing where he goes, all right, and he uses a great argument that I've heard before. He's like, all right, so let's say that there's a pit and these three blind or four blind guys fall into this pit and there's an elephant in the pit and one of them is going to think that it's a tree trunk because he feels a leg. The other one's going to think that it's a snake because he feels the nose. Another one's going to think it's spears because he feels the tusks. And are any of these guys wrong? No, they're describing different parts of maybe Jesus is an elephant. That's what he says. And he gets a laugh because of that. But, I mean, he really puts Bart Ehrman to
shame. Well, that's really funny because I think that's a Buddhist proverb.
Oh, yeah.
About the blind man and the elephant.
That's right.
But, you know, it's a valid point, though, because what Ehrman is missing is that the Gospels weren't written to be unified. It's not the same story completely.
That's right.
They're harmonious.
Yeah.
Each one of them gives us a different view of Jesus and who he was. You know, Matthew is about Jesus, the prophesied Messiah. Mark is about Jesus as the servant. Right. Luke is about Jesus as the human being. And John is about Jesus as God. So obviously John is going to be the one that focuses on Jesus being God. But yeah, I thought that was an interesting...
Yeah, so he pretty much, I mean, I don't know how Bart Ehrman ended his day, but I imagine it didn't go well after that because he was pretty much like shut up on national television.
From what I understand, Colbert had already nailed Ehrman before on something.
Really?
And so like, you would think he would be smart enough not to come on the show.
Right.
Because honestly, Colbert didn't give him any chance to talk.
That's pretty much the truth.
He would let him say a few words and then he would just slam him. So, you know, but...
I loved it, man. And then, so while I'm cruising around the Huffington Post, picking up the story about the boy who goes to heaven, I see this headline. It says, Pat Robinson says asteroid could come next week pretty much to destroy the world. And actually, Pat Robinson says, yeah, doomsday asteroid could hit next week. And I'm like, yay, Pat Robinson. We need to... You know those jokes about Chuck Norris? Yeah, we really need to start making some jokes about Pat Robinson. Because, I mean, that guy is a legend. But he's so funny.
I can bench press 400 pounds. That's or right.
Because of this shake that I drink every day. And you should drink it too. Yeah.
Pat Robinson gets me because, you know, back whenever the earthquake hit Haiti back in 2010. Oh, yeah. He does this whole thing about that was God's judgment upon the voodoo nation and all that sort of thing. It's like, wow, there's the he's got that Westboro thing.
In yeah, definitely. And so anyways, I watched this video. It was hilarious with this woman is reporting on how astronauts are pretty much saying that there are far more asteroids that have hit Earth than we expected, and so they're coming up with this new asteroid detection thing. And Pat Robinson, well, I'll let you listen to the clip and judge for yourself. It's pretty funny. So okay, here we go.
And none of them were detected ahead of time. The group supports a mission to find and track asteroids decades in advance to deflect them from hitting the Earth, which we all hope they will be successful at, Pat.
Well, I wrote a book. It's called The End of the Age, and it deals with an asteroid hitting the Earth. I don't see anything else that fulfills the prophetic words of Jesus Christ other than an asteroid strike. There isn't anything that will cause the seas to roil, that will cause the, you know, skies to darken, the moon, the sun not to give their light, the nations terrified on Earth at what's happening. There isn't anything that's going to do that. My asteroid was 1 kilometer. It was 1/6 of a mile. And that was enough to bring a worldwide collapse. If we had one that was a mile in diameter, and that's just a big old hunk of space rock, isn't it?
Okay, so there's no other way prophecy can be fulfilled.
I knew it. I told everybody. I just knew it. It was going to be an asteroid.
Does Hal Lindsey know this?
Oh, man, exactly. Oh, that's so great. I wrote a book on this. You guys need to listen. That's why my asteroid was a meter wide. Can you imagine? I think he's hilarious. I don't know if he's... Some people, they just need to go, all right, dude, your time's done. But let's move on. Pat's interesting feller. So you can always watch him for a great comedy time. So anyways, that's what's in the news today.
All right. Well, let's talk about Passover. We just finished Passover week. Mm-hmm. And in fact, Monday was the last day of Passover, I believe.
Really?
It's the 21st.
Yep, Monday. No, today.
Oh, sorry. The 21st of Nisan.
I don't know that, dude. That's too much for me.
Well, that's the Jewish calendar. So... Well, anyway, let's talk about what Passover is. because we just finished that week, and if we go back to, obviously this is this past Sunday was what is often called Resurrection Sunday,
Easter,
and we'll talk about that too, and obviously that followed up, you know, closely behind Good Friday.
Right.
All of this is a celebration of what happened a couple thousand years ago at Passover.
So you're telling me that Passover wasn't the night when the Easter Bunny passed over my house and dropped eggs? So that, you know...
the Easter Bunny delivered the eggs.
That's right. You know that I realized I was an adult the day that my parents didn't get me an Easter basket. That was the defining moment of my adulthood. It really was. I moved back home and I was expecting an Easter basket sitting outside my door on Easter morning. It didn't happen. So anyways.
So you didn't get any chocolate eggs or peeps?
I didn't.
Or anything.
I was so... I think I went to the gas station and got some chocolate eggs because I was so frustrated. But broke my heart. It's when I became an adult. Anyways, that has nothing to do with what we're talking about.
Okay, so Passover goes all the way back into the Old Testament times. And there's been so many movies about Moses that how could we not know this story? But it goes back to the last plague of Egypt. So
Right. You've
got the children of Israel that are their slaves
right. In
Egypt. And Moses is the deliverer who's been chosen by God to lead the children of Israel out of bondage, out of slavery. And to do this, it's exemplified through 10 plagues that come upon Egypt.
Right.
And it was God's design that Pharaoh would not accept the supernatural signs that were happening.
Ooh, we can get into a lot of theological thought right there. God's design that Pharaoh wouldn't accept.
Yeah. Well, that's, I mean, it even comes out and says that God
hardened
his heart. And so, I mean, well, that's a topic for another day.
That's right.
but on this particular plague, the last one was
death of the newborn.
Right. Of the firstborn.
So
the angel of death was going to come through the Egypt and the city of Goshen and where all the Israelites were camped.
Right.
And they had been given specific orders of what to do on that night to avoid the firstborn dying in their home.
Right.
And I think it's significant that we're dealing with the firstborn, and it's significant that a lamb was slain, and that the blood of that lamb was to be marked around the door of the household.
Right.
That would be passed over. And if the family did this and they ate the lamb, they had all these instructions of what
right. They
were to do. They were supposed to eat the lamb. It even told them what they were to wear, what they couldn't wear right. While they were eating it. So all of this is symbolic of Jesus Christ. Of course, you know, they don't know all that back then, but to what ends up happening, obviously, is this angel of death comes through and strikes the firstborn dead in every household that is not marked with blood on the door.
Right.
And this is finally the act of God that causes Pharaoh to release the children of Israel.
Of Israel, that's right.
So,
because he loses his only son, loses his firstborn.
Right. So God establishes a meal that is going to happen, a feast that's going to happen every single year to commemorate this particular event.
Wow. You know, God really thinks ahead, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He's like,
go figure.
I'm gonna set down this meal that's going to commemorate this event to bring it to the minds of the Israelites every year, what I've done, so that it's an amazing thing. So that whenever they look at the Messiah,
right,
they can see that.
Right, right. They can see like an echo going backward, like
that's
a
right.
shadow going backward. And this is one of the things that we're going to talk about in our next podcast too, about symbols of Christ.
Exactly.
But there are. Since we don't really have time to cover all of those things today, we'll just kind of talk about how Passover symbolizes Christ. So you have this thing that's happening, and he wants them to do it every year.
Right.
Humans are prone to forget stuff.
That's right.
Right? Yeah. So God establishes this so that the Messiah would be remembered, even though they don't know that. They think that they're commemorating just their leaving Egypt. And although that is involved there, that is all symbolic of the Messiah.
Well, and not only you look at the Israelites leaving Egypt is a great symbol of us. I mean, God is an amazing story writer. He's just awesome. We gotta talk about that some other podcast. But this is a I liken it to the prequel. You know what I mean? This is a foreshadowing of events. And what's awesome is, so you have every little detail to me screams of what Christ did for us on the cross.
Right?
Like the Egyptians leaving Israel is a great picture of us.
You mean the Israelites?
The
Israelites leaving Egypt.
Did I say that?
You said that the other way around.
Wow.
The Egyptians left Israel.
Yeah. And, you know, Moses left the ark and, something like that. But, so the Israelites leaving Egypt is a great picture of us leaving our bondage of sin.
Right.
It's pretty cool.
And think about this too. What did the children of Israel do to earn that freedom?
Nothing.
They did nothing. God loved them.
Exactly.
And he gives them this gift.
That's right.
Through this process.
That's right.
That involved a slain lamb and blood.
Yeah.
They were able to be set free.
Hey, man, that's good, man. That'll preach.
Yeah.
That's what my dad used to say. That'll preach. That's good.
So, and we know that besides the similarities, we know that Jesus was the fulfillment of that particular event because several things. One, Jesus has Passover, obviously his whole life because he's a Jew, but right before he dies, he says in, Luke 22, verse 15, he tells his disciples, I have longed to have this Passover meal with you. And what does he do in that particular Passover meal?
Take, eat, this is my body.
Yes.
Take, drink, this is my blood.
And he doesn't say, from now on, this is my body and this is my blood. He says it like, this is what this is.
Exactly. This is what it means,
this is what it is. Do this in remembrance of me.
And I wonder if any of the disciples sitting there, I mean, it had to have been after, I believe, after his death, burial, and resurrection that they really got that.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure they didn't get it at all.
But, you know, sitting there, Peter, I mean, come on, guys. Get a clue. Do you see this?
Right, this is great.
And he, not only that, but he comes out right before that and he says, the Son of Man must, you know, die, but I'm leaving you. I'm going to die, but 3 days later, I'll be raised from the grave. And they still didn't.
Yeah.
Still didn't get it. People are cheap.
But, you know, in... Even whenever Paul is getting on to the Corinthians, because they're absorbing this heinous sin in their midst of rampant fornication.
Right.
And it's almost like they're leaning on this cheap grace idea because it says they're boasting about it.
Right.
Like they're saying, hey, we can do all this and it's cool.
Yeah. Because we're covered, man.
Because we're covered by the blood.
That's right.
And, you know, Paul has to slap them around a little bit and say, you know, just like he told us in the Roman letter, you know, you don't sin so that grace can abound. That's not the way it's supposed to work. Grace is the saving factor, but you have to be changed.
That's right.
And one of the things he tells them in 1 Corinthians 5, whenever he's dealing with this whole thing, he says, you must cast out the leaven because a little leaven leavens the whole lump. And then he says, do not partake of this feast with leaven. And he makes a comparison to the Passover meal.
Right.
And he says, for Jesus is that Passover lamb. Mm. He comes right out and says that Jesus is the Passover lamb.
Right.
And of course, not only is he the Passover lamb, he's also the sacrificial lamb for Yom Kippur, or the Day of Atonement.
Day of Atonement.
You know, John, whenever he first sees Jesus, the first recording in the book of John of John the Baptist seeing Jesus, what's he say?
Behold, the Lamb, the Lamb that takes away the sins of the world.
Right, right. So, yeah. So you have this definite thing that's happening. So around the Passover week, there's confusion about what exactly happened when, and so I want to kind of talk about some of the things like, you know, Good Friday, right. And was Jesus killed on a Friday and resurrected on a Sunday?
My math does not add up on that.
Did it happen this time of year? You know, that's one of the things that, you know, there's a lot of Christians that have issue with Christian holidays.
Yeah.
A lot of it, especially Protestants, because a lot of it has Catholicism as a basis. And like, for example, Christmas, everyone argues, well, we don't even know Jesus was born that time of the year.
Right.
And there's arguments for and against it, and et cetera, et cetera.
I remember when I was a kid and people started abbreviating Christmas X-M-A-S, and everybody got up all in arms on that.
Yeah.
And they didn't realize that X was the Greek for Christ.
Right. It's a symbol of Christ.
It's a symbol of Christ. Right. They didn't get that, but they were, oh, they're taking Christ out of Christmas right there.
Right.
No, they're putting it in Christmas. You don't get it. But whatever.
But no. but Easter's different, or, you know, or Resurrection Sunday, whatever you want to label it, because you don't want to hold on to that name or whatever.
Sure.
But it's different in the fact that we know it happened this time of year.
Yeah.
And we know that because of the Jewish calendar.
Right.
Because the Jewish calendar, it tells us in the text, on the 14th day of the first month, that's when this happened.
Right.
And then Jesus had the meal on the 14th day of the first month. The first month in the Jewish calendar is Nisan, which is this month that we're in right now. And it doesn't map up 12 months to 12 months in our Gregorian calendar.
That's so frustrating.
But and there's lots of debate that happened about setting the date of Easter and all that stuff going back into the early Catholic Church.
Yeah.
But the thing is, we do know that it happened on Passover. We know that that's whenever he was betrayed,
right,
and sacrificed.
Sacrificed, yeah.
And so what I want to talk about is how in the world do we fit 3 days and three nights? Because if Jesus is in the ground for 3 days, and we know he was killed on a Friday and resurrected on a Sunday, how does that fit?
Well, you got to look at Jewish calendar again, don't you?
Yes. Well, that's part of it. One of the things I think that what we need to do is there are several things in Scripture that I think we need to make sure we don't compromise when we're trying to figure this out. There's like six things that I had kind of found that I think that we have to stick to. One of them is that Jesus was betrayed on Passover. So we know that.
Right.
Based on Luke 22 verse 15 and 1 Corinthians 11, whenever Paul is reiterating the Lord's Supper, he says on the night he was betrayed, he took this. So we know that he was betrayed on Passover evening. We also know that the Passover meal happens in the evening on the 14th day of the month of Nisan. In our calendar, that was last Monday. Last Monday was the 14th. Another thing that we have to keep in mind is that days in the Jewish culture begin at sundown.
Right.
On the previous day. So, and this comes from Genesis 1, verse 5, when it starts talking about
there was night and day the second day.
Right, right. Whenever God is declaring everything and creating everything, he says in the evening and the morning was the first day. So he starts in the evening. That's why the Jews start in the evening.
Right.
So that's something that we have to kind of hold on to.
Huh.
Also, and one of the big ones is in John, the 19th chapter. And I want to look at that right quick, because this is the big verse that makes everybody hold to Good Friday. And that's John 19, verse 31. It says, since it was the day of... This is Jesus hanging out on the cross. It says, since it was the day of preparation, and so that the bodies would not remain on the cross on the Sabbath, for that Sabbath was a high day, the Jews asked Pilate that their legs might be broken and that they might be taken away. Okay, so they didn't want dead bodies hanging on the cross during Sabbath.
Right, on Saturday.
So
they had to do it before sundown.
Right. Exactly. So we think of Sabbath as Saturday. That's what we generally think of Sabbath.
As. Right.
So that's why we have this idea of a Good Friday.
Mm-hmm.
That it, okay. Another thing to keep in mind, though, that where it gets troublesome is Matthew 12, verse 40. Jesus is talking about the sign of Jonah. And he says, just as Jonah was in the belly of the whale 3 days and three nights, so shall the Son of Man be in the ground for 3 days and three nights. So he doesn't say 3 days. He says 3 days and three nights. So that raises an issue now, because the sixth thing we have to keep is that he was resurrected pre-dawn on the first day of the week. It tells us that in Matthew 28, verse 1.
Which should be Sunday.
Right. So we know, it sounds like we got contradictory facts. Bart Ehrman probably loves this.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, Passover was on a, to reiterate, Passover is on a Monday, right?
Well, this year it was
this
on a
year.
Monday.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
So Passover then was on...
According to
totally
tradition,
lost now.
According to tradition, it would be Friday.
Friday, okay.
Because he was betrayed
right.
and killed on the same day.
Exactly.
So the idea, it's convoluted because we have these facts in Scripture.
Right.
Well, the thing that I believe is the key to it is the verse that we just read that makes us think it's Friday. Because it says, let's read it again. Since it was the day of preparation, and so that the bodies would not remain on the cross on the Sabbath. Now, there's a parenthetical here. For that Sabbath was a high day. One of the things that a lot of people don't realize is that, so we're talking about Passover week, the first full day of Passover was a high day. It was a, it was a Sabbath.
Right.
You could not have any work done in that day.
Right.
And it actually tells us that in Exodus as well. It says the first day is a holy day. You can't work in it. The seventh day also is a holy day, and you can't work in it.
Huh.
So it doesn't matter what day of the week Passover fell on. The next day was Sabbath.
Right.
Okay. So in this particular instance, it's not telling us it was a Friday. It's telling us that the next day was a feast day. It was a Sabbath. It didn't matter if it was a Saturday or not.
Oh, so it doesn't. So this doesn't necessarily mean Saturday.
Correct. It means that it was a high day. It was a high Sabbath day. And so, with that in mind, it's real easy then to plug in 3 days and three nights and try to figure it out.
Right.
If we go full 12-hour days and 12-hour nights, then that puts Passover on a Tuesday. So Jesus would have died on a Tuesday, been in the grave 3 days and three full days and three full nights, and resurrected on Sunday the 18th of Nisan. Now,
my mind has just been blown.
If we don't quite be so stringent about the 12 hours, you can add a little here and a little there.
Right.
You can even push it up a day and say that it happened on a Wednesday and he was resurrected then on the 17th of Nisan, which I think is probably more accurate. And the reason why is because I love symbols. If you go back to Genesis, like chapter 8 or 9, whenever the flood ends, it says that on the 17th day of the month, which at that time the calendar had not changed,
yeah,
it was the same month. It was Nisan.
Whoa.
On the 17th day is when they came out of the ark to walk in newness of life, right?
Wow.
And so I believe that's a symbol.
That's interesting.
So, you know, who knows? You can't nail it down. But people that say, hey, the Bible contradicts itself because you can't put 3 days and three nights between Friday and Saturday.
Don't
or
understand
Sunday.
The meaning of the Sabbath there.
Right, right. Or and of course, that goes all the way back to the Catholics that had established Good Friday in relationship to this verse. So,
wow, that's pretty amazing.
But anyway, that was just a fun thing that I did. But let's talk about bunnies.
Yeah, because that's what it's all about anyways, right? Oh, man. Where did we get, like, bunnies and eggs?
Right.
Like, don't you think it should be like, maybe, I don't know, hens and eggs? Because bunnies, don't they, I don't think they lay eggs. I'm pretty sure they're mammals, right?
Yeah, last time I checked.
Exactly. So that doesn't make total sense to me, but whatever. Hey.
Well, you know, I heard it said one time that it was a drunk guy that came up with it. He was like, I know what Easter needs. I know how we should celebrate Jesus' resurrection.
Let's get a bunny.
There's a bunny. And wait. There's eggs,
because of course.
Yeah, it makes no sense whatsoever.
Yeah,
and so you know, there,
oh my goodness,
there is a lot, and this is where people get bent out of shape about Easter, is because there is definitely some pagan stuff back in the day.
Oh yeah,
that this came from.
Oh yeah,
and so you know, I don't know definitively what it would be. Because you can read all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
There's a book by...
It's kind of like Halloween. It's the same way. We don't know definitively.
Yeah.
We know there's lots of guesses. Worship,
yeah, there's lots of guesses.
Exactly.
The same way with Christmas. There's all this speculation about, oh, I know that it happened in Babylon and blah, blah, blah. We don't have those type of records.
Right.
If we go and look at a non-religious historical survey of the Babylonian culture, you won't find all this stuff. Like the cult of Semiramis and Tammuz and all these things that a lot of people cast Christmas and Easter onto.
Right.
There was a book written about 100 years ago by a man named Alexander Hislop called Two Babylons. Huh. And it's a very anti-Catholic book. And he's putting Catholicism as he's casting it as the
second Babylon.
Yeah, right, in the Revelation.
Because what he wants to do is call it the whore of it's the whore of Babylon.
Right.
I have many friends in my line of my denomination that love to argue that point. Catholicism to them is like, I mean, they're the whore of Babylon. Yeah. That's what they are.
Oh, and 40 years ago, man, that was a big thing.
Oh, yeah.
It's, you know, yeah. I think now that Islam has come to light, that's kind of taking over a lot of people's thoughts about, you know, who the whore of Babylon is.
Right.
But I've even heard it been said that America
is the whore of Babylon. Yeah.
As it fits into that role. So, but if we go back to this book, this guy made a lot of speculation in it. Yeah. And he spoke it like it was fact.
Huh.
And because of that, people took that and ran with it.
Yeah.
They have in mind that that Easter comes from the Middle Eastern god of Ishtar and all this.
That makes sense.
I mean, it sounds similar.
Yeah, why not?
But because it sounds similar, does that mean for sure that's where it came from?
That's right.
Yeah, we don't know. The best guess that I've heard so far comes from Germany. Astora, which is a Germanic goddess. And the reason why it sounds more likely is because from the best that we can determine, the bunny thing came from there.
Huh.
Came from Germany. It's like the first recorded instances of this Easter bunny came from German folklore.
Was it just like a worship, I guess?
It's about fertility.
Okay. Yeah,
and,
it makes sense.
And but the thing is, they really don't know which one came first, the bunny or the egg.
That's so awesome.
No, but they don't know if Christianity predated the worship of Astora, or whether she predated Christianity.
Yeah.
But best guess, that's where it came from.
Right. I mean, I can definitely see the egg stuff because, of course, it is in the pagan sector. It really is a worship of just new beginnings. It's all about
fertility.
Fertility, you know, spring has sprung.
Yes, yes, it ties in right.
Exactly. Yeah.
And bunnies and eggs are both symbols of fertility.
Yeah.
So that's why they're there. It's not like there's bunnies and eggs together.
That totally makes sense now. I'm 32 years old and I just got that about the bunnies.
Wow.
Oh man. I cannot wait to call my wife and say, hey, did you know that? No, I'm joking.
But
that's
you know,
interesting though.
So many people are up in arms about all this because it does have pagan influences. Yeah. But, you know, one of the things that the Catholic Church was big about doing, and not just the Catholic Church, I think it just predated the Catholic Church, but they were supplanting
sure
the pagan rituals with Christian rituals.
Right.
So it was like, okay, you want to worship a bunny? You want to have a bunny? Why don't we make it about Jesus' resurrection? And to overshadow
right
the worship of, yeah, of Estore. Because think about it for a minute.
Yeah.
Who's out there worshiping Estore?
Right.
Nobody.
Yeah.
There's not a single culture on the planet that yeah still worships that goddess.
That's right.
Jesus has conquered in death.
That's right. That's
so
good.
So, you know, if anything, it's a reminder to me that Jesus conquered amen Easter.
That's good.
and it is it has taken over from that aspect.
Hmm. That's a good thought. I've never thought of that before. You always go back, you can all the way back in history, you can see how when one group conquers another, what they do is they kind of assimilate.
Right? Right.
That's the idea, is we're going to assimilate your
culture.
We're
going to steal your culture.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Into ours, and we're going to make it mean what we want it to mean. And that's pretty much what the Roman Catholics did. I mean, they were the rulers of the known world for, right, so long.
Right.
Well, that's what they did. They did that big time in Ireland, assimilate it with St. Patrick and all that.
Right.
And so, yeah.
Well, and I think that, I mean, personally, I don't have a problem with that. Because to me, I mean, Christians are concerned that by doing an Easter egg hunt, they're giving homage to this pagan goddess. Yeah. Like, no, you're not necessarily. It's just a reminder to me
right
that now what once belonged to a pagan goddess
has been redeemed.
Christ has taken exactly it over. Because Christ has taken over the world.
That's right.
And one of the things, reasons why I think this is, goes back to when Melanie and I went to Israel. We made a trip up to Caesarea Philippi. And, you know, Caesarea Philippi is only really mentioned one time in Scripture.
That's right.
In Matthew 16, Jesus takes his disciples up there. And
if people knew what Caesarea Philippi was like back then, they would go, why in the world did Jesus take his disciples to Caesarea
right
Philippi?
Because it was not a Jewish thing. I mean, it was pagan, like crazy.
Yeah.
And another thing is, you know, the Scripture is very, very short. It just says, and then they went, when then they came unto Caesarea Philippi, and Jesus said,
yeah.
So it's like they're just walking around, and they stumbled upon this place. No, this place is up in the middle of nowhere, yeah, all by itself. Right. It was a full, huge journey from Galilee.
Right.
So why did he bother taking them all the way up there? It's nothing more than a huge rock face, a huge cliff, with all these pagan temples carved out of the rock.
Right.
And during the day of Jesus, this was a cultural, religious, pagan worship center.
Right.
People were there just, pick your god.
Right. It was the food court of pagan religion.
Yes, attend the altar of your choice.
Exactly. And, I mean, some of those religions, you had temple prostitutes having sex openly.
Yes, it was crazy.
In front of everybody, so you imagine the disciples walking around going, I've got to cover my eyes here.
Why are you bringing us
exactly
here?
Exactly, what in the world, you know?
And one of the things that's there is one of the springs in which creates the River Jordan.
Yeah.
And it comes out of this grotto in the side of this rock wall. And that grotto is called the gates of Hades.
That's right, the gates of hell.
Right. And
so what does Jesus say?
Yeah, there's all kinds of cool stuff that happens here. Because, okay, so we've been stuck in reading Matthew 16 without this context, right?
Right.
But whenever we were there and we went through Matthew 16, it's like, okay, first thing, it was Jesus say, who do these people say that I am?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, now they're standing in the middle of this huge pagan
food
place,
court, yeah,
and it's like, well, some might say that you're the Messiah or that you're
a prophet. Some
but,
say you're Jeremiah or Ezekiel.
Yeah, but you know, on the whole, the people there would have not even
right
known. And of course, then that's when Jesus has this conversation with Peter, and Peter says, "You are the Son of God," and he says, "There's no way you could have gotten that." especially standing right where we're standing.
Yeah.
There's no way you could have gotten that. That had to be given to you by God. And that's when he gives him the name Peter, where he says,
Cephas.
You are Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church. Sure. And there's all this debate about, okay.
He's the first Roman Pope.
Right. That's what the Catholics lean on it and say that's where he was given his divinity as the Pope. And then you have the Protestant stance has predominantly been, no, it's the statement that Peter made that Jesus is referring to.
I believe it's the fact that what he's saying is, you guys are going to be the ones that carry mm-hmm. that truth to the world upon you.
And there's one more way of looking at it that I've never seen before until we were there. He says, we're in front of this huge rock face, right?
Yeah.
This huge single rock that everything's carved out of. And he says, you are Petros, pebble. You're a small rock.
Yeah.
This is upon this rock. Let's assume that maybe Jesus swept his arm across this pagan worship center.
Huh.
It's upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell, pointing over at the grotto, right. The gates of hell will not prevail against it. Amen. So, what would that message be then? Well,
I'm going to conquer all of this.
Right.
All this.
I'm taking all of this over. None of this will exist 1,000 years from now.
Yeah.
But I will still be here.
Right.
And now, just like the guide that we were there with said, he was like, who's here? Who comes to Caesarea Philippi? His church.
That's right.
That's the only people who go there now.
Wow.
Because of Matthew 16.
Wow.
So it's
that's
like,
so good.
So, you know, I kind of have this different view of these pagan past, you know, whatever. Sure, that's where it began. But you know where it ended. It ended with Jesus Christ conquering the world.
Amen. So. Wow. Well, we went from Passover to buried, resurrected in 3 days to Caesarea Philippi. God's story is amazing.
And all the bunnies.
That's right. And all the bunnies in the middle. So,
all right. Good. Oh, voicemail.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Hang on 1 second. We got a voicemail.
No way.
Your request to be removed from our call list will be fulfilled immediately.
It's a pre-recorded thing. Someone called us the wrong number.
So. Oh, man.
So call us on our voicemail line.
We would love to feature you and make a discussion out of it.
Yeah.
And I promise
and make
you.
Make fun of you.
Exactly. We will not make fun or anything. Come on, David. Come on. We don't want any more pre-recorded messages. We want the real thing here.
Okay. So that number is 972-885-7270. So it's going to be a short week because we're going to come back with episode 4 before this week is out.
I'm all ready for it already.
All right. Well, thanks for being here, Jeremiah.
Hey, thank you, David.
And God bless. We'll see you next time on the Theonauts.
Later days.
This has been the Theonauts Podcast. Call us with your questions or comments at 972-885-7270. That's 972-885-7270. Love to hear from you.